Going to call to order the Tuesday, May 11th iteration of the Ways and Means Public Safety Subcommittee. And we are in work session for House Bill 5055. Can I have staff recommendations, please?
I've handed out to you a packet that includes a cover memo summarizing the staff recommendation. The page following that are some budget notes for your consideration. And then the biggest part of the packet is both a general fund budget summary and then an agency summary and program unit summary of the proposed action on this budget. I will start just by calling your attention to the first part of the cover memo. It summarizes the general fund, other funds, federal funds, position, and FTE recommendations that we're making. And I'll talk about that in more detail. I'm also recommending a special purpose appropriation to the emergency board, which I'll talk about in detail. And then we had discussed in committee previously some language that would allow the agency to clarify the agency's ability to pay property damage claim expenditures. And then there are some other issues that we'll want to talk about in regards to capital construction, expenditure limitation. We expect that will be dealt with by another committee in a capital construction bill because those are generally separated from the appropriation bill. And so the question is, does this committee want to make a recommendation to that as yet unnamed committee for that? There is a policy issue in terms of how you calculate or how you forecast post-custody bed needs. And is it the legislative intent in future to include property and other nonviolent offenders as part of that forecast? And then, again, we'll get to the budget notes that have come from many and varied sources. So now if I could ask you to go to this first page of the, I guess it's the second part of your handout. It summarizes the general fund recommendations that we are making. The general fund budget as it was printed as the governor's initial recommendation is shown there, $211 million. Then I've listed the governor's proposal isn't. I don't necessarily need to go over those in detail if you're comfortable with those. The agency did and budget management division did discuss those in their budget presentation. These are all part of the governor's revised budget. The most significant ones were to fund the April 99 bed forecast increase, to cut a couple of the policy packages that were included in the governor's original budget, and those were the policy packages that enhanced the employee training and also enhanced the mental health assessment services. There were additional administrative reductions that were taken, and then some other technical budget adjustments. On capital construction, the governor's revised budget proposed using other funds instead of general funds, for capital improvement, proposed using other funds instead of general funds for that, and to shift $134,700 of that to capital construction because of the categorical definitions of capital construction. So we get a subtotal governor's revised budget of $207.3 million general fund. To get to the budget target for this agency and to reflect some of the things that are proposed in the co-chair's budget, we have another list of recommended adjustments here. The first one under the facilities heading would restore the bed capacity that the governor's budget eliminated based on anticipation of second look legislation. The co-chair's budget restores that. It doesn't look like the second look legislation at this point is passing, and even if it did, the idea was not to make a reduction in bed capacity as a result of that. So the recommendation would be to disapprove that particular policy package, add the money back into the budget. Now the next line item gets a little more complicated because I've tried to present this by program unit. We're crossing program units in a couple of areas. Reducing funded beds for juvenile crime package impact assumes that there will be a juvenile crime prevention package coming out of this legislature and some funding for juvenile crime prevention. With that assumption, the recommendation is that we expect that there will be a reduction in I don't know if demand is the right word, but a reduction in need for close custody at the OYA facilities. And so what we've done here is say, we don't really know what that's going to be. We will make an aggressive assumption that we're going to save $1.6 million as a result of a juvenile crime prevention package passing. Now, if you look under the community programs, you'll see $10 million coming out of this budget. The assumption, again, is that although we're not dealing with the crime prevention package itself in this budget, that it will be part of Senate Bill 555 or another vehicle coming out of this session. So we're removing it from this budget, which is where the governor had it initially, pending a later vehicle to deal with that.
But, by reducing this funding for the beds in the juvenile crime package, I see here $1.6 million. Is that cost to occur at the front of the biennium, the middle of the biennium, or the tail end of the biennium?
The $1.6 million is a phased-in amount, so it assumes nothing for the first 3 months of the biennium and then ramps up to about 40 beds by the end of the biennium. So it is a pretty aggressive assumption in terms of reduction of impact on OYA.
What happens to this then if 555 passes?
Are they then going to have to come back to E-Board for an expenditure authorization to meet this demand, or is this something that their budget will have to absorb?
If a juvenile crime prevention package does not pass, my recommendation would be that they be allowed to come back to the emergency board for additional funding. And as another piece of this $1.6 million reduction, because it is an estimate, what I'm recommending is that we do put $500,000 into the emergency board as a special purpose appropriation to set up, sort of hedge the estimated reduction for this purpose and for any construction planning that they might need to do if the forecast changes.
Okay.
So it's a $1.6 million reduction here. We're hedging it, or my recommendation is to hedge it a little bit.
So it's really a $1.1 reduction.
And the other issue that you'll see when you get to the budget notes is that there's a recommended budget note that basically says if the forecast changes, whether for this reason or, you know, some other untoward events, crime rates go through the roof and they've got 100 extra kids that they need to deal with, that the agency should come back to the emergency board at that point for additional bed funding if needed.
There's a lot of flex there for the agency. The last thing we want to do is short them on the dead space. And I think we address the concern pretty well. Go ahead, Sheila.
Okay. The next line item then is an additional reduction in funded beds. This represents about 3 beds for the full biennium. And the context of this reduction is that to get to the budget target, when we were looking at reductions, one of the things that was a potential reduction was to not fund the minority transition package. This is $400,000 that the agency uses to help minority youth transition from the institutions back into the community. And they have had a federal grant from this, had some good success, and they would expect if that package wasn't funded that there would be some additional bed needs. But those kids, rather than staying out in the communities with these transition services, would in fact be committing other crimes or otherwise coming back into the institution. So to continue to fund that program at its current level, what the recommendation is here is to take an additional, and it's about 3 bed reduction that the agency will need to manage to, and then in the community programs take $200,000 from existing gang diversion funds. So on the one hand, you're continuing the minority transition package. You are making reductions in other areas of the budget to pay for. So that is based on a priority assessment in terms of the importance of that package to the agency. Okay, then the next one is $893,000 reduction because expenditures for the juvenile justice information system have been a little bit slower than expected. The next sale to fund phase two of that system can be deferred. The original expectation would be in May of this year. It can be deferred until May of next year. And basically what that means is that you then pay in 901 when you get service principal payment into interest payment. Now you will have some roll-up, of course, and you're not saving money overall for that program, but it's, in terms of immediate funding needs, it is a reduction for this budget. Okay. In the community programs, as I said, we took out the $10 million here on the expectation that that would be dealt with in another venue. The gang diversion funding for the minority transition package I've talked about. The next two reductions are technical in nature. The federal Medicaid match rate, the proportion of funds that the federal government will pay for eligible services under the Medicaid program, fluctuates all the time, and what this does is update that most recent match rate assumption, and it saves us about a little over 100,000 general fund. So that is not a program reduction, it's just a funding shift. So what we get to general fund is a total budget of $198.2 million for the agency, plus an additional $500,000 recommended as a special purpose appropriation to address, again, any fluctuations in the bed capacity needs and to provide them with some construction planning money to the extent that they need it during this coming biennium.
Sure. Representative Kozanski.
Before we go off the stage, I guess I want to go back to where Senator Hannon had left off asking the questions about the reduction in funds on beds for juvenile crime package. The one above it was dealing with the anticipation that was, I guess, in the original budget to having a supplement program in place. I know the chair of the supplement committee and myself have talked about this before as to whether something was going to go forward. If something does go forward, can you tell us, or has there been some discussion about what's going to happen at $3.9 million that is going back into the budget, where that would end up?
If the second look legislation would pass, I don't believe there's been a discussion as to whether that would come out or not. I would expect that it would probably stay in this budget, but if the legislation was passed, maybe there would be some further discussion on
that. That would possibly be a place that if we're looking to acquire money for other worthy programs, that might be something the chair of this subcommittee may consider.
I would always be open to the option of spending $4 million. But before I shoot Representative Kozanski, I mean, who knows where that second look is going to go? I mean, number one, I think it's prudent to put it in the budget now. It's been reserved or approved by leadership and the co-chairs, so let's budget it in there now. If something happens, the way that legislation gets legs and passes, I think it will be a very intricate house of cards and probably won't be something that we address until the final days of the session.
Mr. Chair, I understand and I respect that too. Is this something I hope that we do keep in mind? I know Representative Mannix and his discussion yesterday, at least what I caught on the radio, seemed like he still was open to these suggestions depending on what the package might be. So it might be a way that we could actually backfill some of the budgets that have come before this committee that we were not necessarily in total agreement, but realizing the limitations we've had.
Well, we all know Representative Mannix will be working very hard on this. I mean, after all, he passed out the military budget from this committee. It's his responsibility, and he's still looking for $2.5 million. And thank you for doing so, sir.
Mr. Chairman?
Chairman Hannon.
The total general fund reduction, the target by the co-chairs, is that at 4% or 2.5% or
2.2, 2.1?
It's about 2.2%, calculating it based on the original government budget, personal services, services and supplies, capital outlay, using some of the governor's proposed revisions to the extent that they're administrative reductions that we otherwise would have looked for, and then using what is considered to be administrative reductions on this point is about 2.2%.
2.2.
Not including the 10 million.
Right.
Well, the 10 million is still a number.
Well, we just didn't think it was appropriate to count that as a percentage of the reduction.
Okay.
I mean, I fought for it. Thought it made it look good. But it's, you know, counting smoke and mirrors, so.
Okay, now, on the capital improvements, you're recommending use other funds instead of general funds. Is it bonding or cops or what would it be identified as other funds?
The governor's revised budget shifted out from general fund to other funds, and the agency's expectation is that they would be able to sell some surplus land near McLaren and raise and have those revenues available for the capital improvement, so it's not bonding revenues. It would be from sale of
other property. Is there any other property available in the pool that could be looked at and considered other than the Oak Crest? Or
the agency is saying no.
And the question I have is for this to sell some of these monies and use other funds, is that going to mean an ultimate hit on the general fund, not for this item, but for the next item?
What happens with the capital improvement money, for example, for 9901, they carried forward what could be considered as a base amount of about $200,000 in their capital improvement funding, which is general fund, and that stays general fund and would carry forward into previous biennium. Then next time, they would need to make the pitch about these additional capital improvement dollars, whether those get backfilled with general fund or whether there's something else available. It would not automatically be backfilled with general fund.
Thank you.
Okay,
you're done with the numbers?
I'm done with the general fund numbers.
Yeah. Let's just take it just one piece. Any questions, concerns for the numbers we've laid out so far? Okay.
Now, I feel like I need to go quickly over some of the other funds and federal fund things just so you're aware of them. If you go to page 3 of the worksheet where it shows subcommittee adjustments to governor's recommended budget, those that have the general fund impact we've already covered in my summary, so I won't go over those. Under facilities, fund 15, nutrition revenues, and ad limitation for campaign work programs, those are things that were in the governor's revised budget. Community programs, there's residential care inflation and residential care fee for service models, also in the governor's revised budget. The federal match rate changes are shown there, administrative reductions. The ones I wanted to really call your attention to were under the capital improvement capital construction category, and this is where in the governor's revised budget they shifted from general fund to other funds. But then because of the shift of some of that limitation to capital construction, the recommendation would be to take the $134,700 other funds for capital construction, take it out of the budget at this time. It would go to the as yet to be appointed capital issues committee to be dealt with as part of the statewide capital construction bill. So it doesn't show up in your budget at this time. And then the question for this committee would be to whether you just want that to happen as is or whether you want to make a recommendation to that committee in terms of funding that capital construction item. If you'll remember, that was for planning money for the eventual replacement of the administrative building at McLaren. And there were the photos that were shown about the condition of that building.
Sheila, the elimination on page 3 here of the residential care fee-for-service model, Then you drop down to package, limited package 103, mental health systems or services. Does that mean there's going to be
young people
incarcerated without access to mental health screening, mental health treatment, mental health diagnosis as a means of identifying what's causing them to act on harm?
You may want the agency to address that more. My understanding is that the shift in the residential care model would not in and of itself in any way reduce access to those residential treatment services, although depending on what happens with individual providers, things may shift around to where they're using a different provider rather than the provider they previously used. In terms of the package 103, that was an enhancement of mental health assessments that they're not doing currently to the extent that they would under this package. And so, although, you know, I can't say that everybody that needs mental health treatment is going to be getting it, it would not necessarily be a change from their current services that are available.
Is your question, Senator, a reduction in the availability of mental health services to OYA?
I understand her response that she was saying, as a show, that I think it's something that we need to look at, Mr. Chairman, and I'll be real candid with you, at enhancing maybe even not to the full extent, but some portion. This is an area I think we need to continue to move up to locking a kid up and preparing them for the big leagues isn't my idea of breaking the chain of vicious cycle that surrounds their lives and gets to the cause. And I feel sometimes frustrated that we treat the symptom, but we don't treat the cause. And there's a reason that people act aggressively. There's a reason people act inappropriately. And people just don't set out upon that course of action for their lives without something that's steering them in that direction. If we have a system that keeps them within that cattle guard and shun them down this road, then we're going to be on a schedule to build more and more and more additional prison space to accommodate the growth of these young people to an adult system. And I'm far from being a bleeding heart, but I'm more of a realist. I think it's something that needs to be addressed rather than kind of say, well, if we don't look at it this time, we'll look at it next time. There probably isn't that going to be a better time to look at it.
Thank you for your comment, sir.
I agree.
Let's get through the rest of our report and see. And maybe we'll get Rick to flush that out a little bit.
Okay. I would move you now, if there's no more questions on that particular spreadsheet, I would move you back to the cover memo for the second half of the page where it says other issues. The first one I talked about a little bit as to whether this committee wants to make a recommendation to the as to the capital construction expenditure limitation. The second is that the agency has asked for some policy direction in terms of including property and other nonviolent offenders as part of the total post-custody forecast. In building the budget this time, those additional post-custody beds for property offenders were separated out into a policy package because it was not clear from the last legislative session that those were to be considered, quote, mandated cases, the same way Measure 11 offenders would have been. And so they've asked for some policy direction that those be considered as part of the total post-custody forecast, same as Measure 11 or other offenders. the alternative, if you do not want to provide policy direction, is that you would continue to revisit the issue of the property offended ads in the next budget cycle.
I'm going to rely on the wisdom of my two senior colleagues in the Senate. Would this be a legitimate e-board issue?
Definitely some questions.
Yeah.
Typically, what we do, Mr. Chairman, is we have a capital construction committee down at the end, and all capital constructions from all state agencies go in the form of one bill, and that one bill sets an expenditure limitation on how much the agency can, in fact, spend. If they exceed that amount, then they're all given the authority to reappear back to the emergency board to either increase or decrease that expenditure limitation. CAS more or less monitors the capital construction of all agencies.
Well, but I don't think we have a capital construction committee.
We formed one.
Right at the end?
Right near the end of the session.
Well, then should we defer this action until...
Sure.
I would rather not refer it. I would recommend that we adopt California's recommendations
to the emergency board.
No. LFO recommended that $134,700 other funds capital construction expenditure limitation requested by the agency be approved in the statewide capital construction bill.
Okay.
To clarify, the subcommittee would not include that limitation in the budget. At this time, it would make a recommendation that would go in the budget report and a recommendation to that capital committee that this be funded, that you believe that this is a worthy project and should be funded.
Okay. Do we want a motion at this point in time?
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Anna?
I would move the LFO recommendations that have been presented to us by Ms. Sheila Baker and amend House Bill 5055 with the budget authority of $198,236,861 general fund, $18,007,098 other funds, $26,864,736 federal funds, 1,299 positions, 1,237.57 FTE, and the special appropriation to the E-Board, $500,000 to address potential post-custody forecasts. And included in my motion would be the recommended budget notes on page 2 of the memorandum by Ms. Baker.
Okay, good.
Okay, motion's been made. I appreciate your motion. Any discussion? Anticipated discussion, perhaps we can look at the budget notes. You got ahead of me, but that's okay. There you go.
Well, he can either tackle the death or he can get it passed.
I'm ready. Representative Mann.
Brief discussion. I've read the budget notes. I agree with them, but leaving for the budget note about the Capital Planning Commission and transferring any sorts of land in Marion County doesn't really focus on the Oregon Youth Authority, but this is a generic budget note that we're applying to major government operations in Marion County production of the supposed availability of 2,000 acres of public land for transfer into the private sector and our concern that the Capital Planning Commission be involved in that process. And I support the budget note.
Mr. Chairman, my good friend, we have a six-lane freeway out here. If we build a $1 billion freeway on the outskirts of Portland, we'll be glad to say that a six-lane freeway for a toll road from Marion County. And then it can be used as a revenue offset for you. Put that in your capital planning committee.
Well, we're falling apart fast. We better come to sanity. Representative Schrader.
I have to give you that.
And I've had a little aberration on that last budget note for those of us the Democrats.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Manning.
There's no aberration here if the executive branch...
Oh, elaboration?
The situation right now is that there is a bill pending that makes it clear that the Capital Planning Commission, which has existed since 1948, not only gets to review construction programs, but gets to review destruction programs, devolution programs. And it is not totally clear in that statute, as a precautionary measure, as to the major agencies that have substantial property in Marion County, we're asking that they, through the budget notes, go through the Capital Planning Commission if they're planning to transfer any substantial amounts of land. The reason why this is a pending issue is that there's been lots of discussion groups formed by various agencies to meet with various citizens about selling public land, and there's concern by some of us that if any such sales are pending, that there be a holistic evaluation. Capital Planning Commission was established for that reason. It has two members from the city, two members from executive branch, and three public members, plus one non-voting House member and one non-voting Senate member. It's designed to be a sounding board and a balancing process. And the only reason it's become a hot button right now is because there was some talk of, well, some agencies may have the inherent authority to transfer lands into the private sector without legislative approval or without going through the capital planning process. And some of us want to remind everybody that, no, the legislature also looks at that when it's reviewing the power of the purse or handling the purse. This came up, by the way, two sessions ago when the Department of Education asserted that it probably had the inherent authority to sell the school for the blind without getting legislative approval. So we put in a provision in certain appropriations saying the Department of Education will not use any of its funds to sell the school for the blind without getting approval. It's just a process to make sure there's some brakes put on those kinds of things. Not to stop things from happening if they're appropriate, but make sure that the process runs its full course.
Mr. Chairman, for my good friend from Salem, I apologize for being temperate with my comments, but the Capital Planning Commission was created for a specific purpose, as the good representative said, and it's been in place. Started about 50 years now, and it provides the community of Salem an opportunity to see what state government's impact is going to be on the local community as well. This whole concept of a mall area, state office buildings, has been built over a period of time with the conjunction participation of the Capital Planning Commission, who has been tremendously helpful in resolving any conflicts between local government here. So, as the seat of state government, I think there's nothing left that we should consider to continue working in that effort. And as the representative generally pointed out, some agencies sometimes get the independent feeling that they can buy, sell, and dispose of land without some kind of review, and this is a means of tempering that attitude and making sure that they have a right avenue to approach. And we probably need this in most state agencies, other even in addition to Salem, because we have damage and we have other state facilities that could be impacted.
Representative, just real quick, I appreciate the explanations that helped a bunch. I understand from the budget note this refers to just the Capital Planning Commission.
Only in Salem.
So it's already here right in Salem.
Yeah.
If I may, Mr. Chairman. Yeah. And the Capital Planning Commission authority only extends to Marion and Polk counties to the extent that there's properties there. Most of the properties are in Marion County.
Well, no, I just heard two different things. Or that the authority can't extend to the city limits of Salem.
I didn't say that.
No.
I said the city of Salem has been a participant, but they're in both Marion and Polk County. So,
what Senator Hannon just said is correct.
Which implies, but I won't go there.
Okay, we have a motion before us to move the House Bill, Oregon Youth Authority 5055, to the full committee with a due pass as presented by LFO to include a recommendation that $134,700 of other funds, capital construction, be recommended to the capital committee. Any other discussion? Any dissension? Hearing none? House Bill 5055 is moved to the full Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Okay, we will now... Okay, last people who raise their hands are going
to
carry.
What a procedure. Didn't we have to approve the amendment before we move the bill? I don't remember approving the amendment.
Okay, Carrier, since you are so attentive, you get the honor of carrying this on the Senate side. Do you have any volunteers for the House side?
Representative Brzezinski?
Sure.
Anyone to carry it to full? We've got a lot of membership.
Representative Minutes. Very good. Okay, we're official. And we will adjourn our work session on House Bill 5055 and convene our public hearing on Senate Bill 5506, the Department of Corrections. And we'll begin with LFO and opening comments. Thank you for your patience.
Chair Wilson, committee members, before you today, we will begin public hearings on Department of Corrections budget. I've handed out to you a key summary of some of the opening comments I wanted to make, and I just wanted to make a couple statements to highlight what's on there. There were six budget notes during this meeting last afternoon that the Department of Corrections the sponsor. There were four audit reports that had been previously testified to in this committee, and there was one additional one that I provided you a copy of today, which is the Legislative Audit Committee's report related to inmate work program. There are the most significant policy issue before the E-Board, and probably one of the most significant before this body, is the siting of the Women's Prison Intake Center, which is still unresolved. And in terms of budget-related legislation, there really isn't very much of any great significance. There are three bills, one of which has already passed both houses, and they're noted there for you. There were two interim studies that the department has done, and those are referenced here for your review, one of which may impact the ultimately the prison siting construction cost for site one. And in terms of the major policy issues that you'll be addressing through this budget, there are four, and they're at the top of page two of the statement. One relates to the inmate work program, wherein the governor's budget takes a significant reduction to the inmate work crew budget, capital construction plans that we've talked about previously, the siting decision, and the baseline funding change proposal for community correction. In the way of just telling you about what the budget is being presented to you, the governor's budget originally required the department to identify approximately $20 million in reductions below its current service level budget. And arriving at the governor's revised budget that's going to be discussed before you in the next few days, the agency has already identified, consistent with the co-chair's budget target, an additional $18.5 million in reductions. And with that, I'm done.
Boy, you're fast.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Hanna.
Could I ask Larry, your budget-related legislation, there are three bills identified there. Would this have the net effect of reducing general fund requirements? And are they, in fact, passing through the system, or are they somewhere in limbo?
Talking about House Bill 2222?
Yes.
That one was assumed to have passed when the governor's budget was put together. So those funds were not included in the budget for this committee.
So neither one of these three are included in this budget?
They, House Bill 2213 assumed passage and avoided this $120,000 general fund expenditure.
I know, but if it doesn't pass, so we owe 120,000 additional expenditure limitation.
Yes, sir. That's correct.
Okay. And then House Bill 2020 establishes accounts for proceeds of cops. Doesn't pension account exist now?
Sure, let's go down to Senator Hannon. It does exist, and account has existed for some time, even before Department of Corrections was on its own and under DHR. This just sets up a separate and distinct account specifically for Department of Corrections.
So they can put excess income or interest earnings or
place where their proceeds from COP to be continuously appropriated for primarily for some of the capital construction. So how's keeping this?
Well, I know, but I'm also concerned about when people say the housekeeping bill, there's also, once it's continually appropriated,
then there's nothing to come back for expenditure limitation review or anything.
Sure, that's something I have. My understanding is that that account would be set up based on capital construction expenditure limitations that we established by this body or the emergency board. And the COP would be sold based on that authority that's given to them through the
Act. Be used in this account.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Great. Any questions to staff before we proceed ahead? Gentlemen?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Dave Cook, Director of the Department of Corrections. With me at the table is Dr. Benjamin DeHong, the Deputy Director, and Bill McGee, the Draft Budget Analyst. We are last year, probably certainly not least, if you look at the budget numbers, and we're going to be, our intention is to be relatively quick on this process, give you the overview you need, leave you as much time as you need for questions and clarification, but I think we've got a pretty tight presentation. You have a budget book in front of you, and what we are going to now speak off of is an outline, actually, of that budget book, so you will not be able to essentially follow along with our comments directly, but I think everything you need is in that document. The mission of the Oregon Department of Corrections we take pretty seriously, and I want to make sure that it's real clear from the get-go on this, that we are in the business of holding offenders accountable, responsible for their actions, and the second part of that mission is clearly something that I don't think is new to the DOC, but it's something that we've put a lot of attention to in the last several years, and that is reducing the risk of future criminal behavior as it relates to their release to the community. We have momentum in the projects we're working on. We're moving ahead with a plan we believe is going to take the state into a better position for dealing with offenders. A lot of people have collaborated on these efforts, whether you're talking about the work programs or the crowd system or the programming that we do, treatment activities, creation of new institutional buildings. Generally, I think we're doing what needs to be done in this state. We're doing it, we think, effectively and efficiently, and this budget really represents that kind of effectiveness and efficiency. Larry's talked about the budget reductions that are necessary to take. But on the whole, we're gonna do a good job in the next several years with the budget we're about to present to you. The responsibility for the Department of Corrections in the minds of most people is the responsibility for those adult offenders and some juveniles who are serving more than 12 months in Oregon institutions. We run excellent institutions by, I think, not just by our account, but by other accounts from around this country. We have had now for the 3.5 or so years the lowest incidence of drug usage in any of the institutions nationwide. That's a very aggressive program to reduce substances that really have landed most of the people we're talking about in the institutions that we operate. 70% plus of the people that are either in OYA or in DOC facilities are drug or alcohol affected. We're nationally recognized for the programs we run. DOC believes that programming, in fact, is part of security. If programs are run well, if inmates are occupied, if they're working, if they're doing a whole array of other activities, and they're focused on the future, they're not focused on the next 10 or 15 minutes of troublemaking. In addition to that, we have worked hard in the last several years to really work with the communities and internal to DOC to focus on what happens when institutions release inmates. I think for a long period of time, not just the Oregon Department of Corrections, but prison systems in general focused on what happens during the time that people are incarcerated. Can we control their behavior? Can we prevent riots from occurring? Can we do other things? And our real focus is on all of the above, but it's mostly focused on sort of a real-world environment where the better they do, the better they do. And if they do well in the institutions, they get better job opportunities, they get better cell assignments, they get some things that that really are real-world like. And when they go back to the community, they understand what it's like to be employed. Most of these people never have been employed in the past. They know what it means to be responsible for a family. Most of them never have been. They know what it means to be a contributing member of the community. Most of them never have been. And that's what they're going to learn in the institutions. About 95 or so percent, given any given time, a snapshot of the Department of Corrections, go back to the community. They're coming back to your neighborhood, to my neighborhood. They need to be prepared to do that. Ben's going to talk in just a few minutes about recidivism, but I think people many times fail to understand that this is not a lock them up and throw away the system kind of approach. It really is that almost 95% or maybe a hair over that do go back to the community, and a relatively small number of them fail in that process. And as I said, Ben will talk somewhat more about that. We believe this approach is practical. We don't think it's a soft-on-crime approach. It relates to preparing people for the future, not simply for a punishment mentality. There's no question that going to prison is punishment. Nobody will disagree with that. On the other hand, when they go to the institutions in the state of Oregon, the 13 that we operate, the institution should not be set up to provide more punishment. They're set up for a future orientation for those inmates. We can't overstate, I don't think, and you've heard this through the state police budget, through the OIA budget, I believe, that this is a systems approach to doing business. It's possible to really overbuild a particular part of the system and have disarray in the rest of it. I think you all have struggled with trying to put the right number of law enforcement people on the street, provide the right level of community supervision, provide the right amount of institutional support and construction that needs to be done. And we've tried to approach our budget, and we think the work that we do from a systems point of view, recognizing that what happens before they come into institutions and what happens after actually does matter. And if you unbalance the system, you don't get what you expect, and you spend money, we think, probably needlessly. One thing that I think is kind of interesting to people, and they don't realize it, is that the length of stay, which is really driving the bed situation in the state of Oregon, has changed dramatically in the last several years. Since 1992 to today, it has more than doubled. The average length of stay right now for Oregon prisoners in DOC institutions is about 34.9 months, right at 36 months. Back in 1992, that figure was closer to 16 months, a hair less than that. So just in that seven-year period of time, stays in institutions have more than doubled. I think that to some degree, the public still doesn't understand that people are doing longer sentences. We meet the federal guidelines in terms of truth in sentencing, 85% of the sentences being served by the offenders in our institutions. And that really does speak to both doing the programming side of what happens, but when people go to prison, they go to prison for the prescribed period of time. Ben's going to talk a little bit about recidivism and some other benchmark issues, and then we're going to take a break in just a second after Ben does that, have Bill McGee do a little bit on overview for you, and then move on from that point.
Hey, what you're really in essence telling is there's a prison population that's doubled, but it hasn't increased to the extent that possibly was thought originally on some of these ballot measures to increase the population, because, in other words, something has had a deterrent, or some of that, it's doubled the population, but there must be something else to cause people not to want to go back to the prison.
Mr. Chair, Senator Hannon, I think that that's a debate that probably could go on for days here, and Representative Nanix may have a view in terms of the deterrence piece. Others at the table may believe that there are programming issues that may have impact. It may be that community policing and other things have had impact. I think the reality is all of that's had impact. What I said relative to length of stay was that in the DOC since 92, length of stay has increased from 16 months on average to 36 months on average. The population has not doubled yet. That will occur in the future. The length of stay issue certainly drives that, but what has occurred is that the number of those people prosecuted under a ballot measure 11 type offenses has not risen to the degree that was originally thought to be the case when the initial projections were done. So it's both fewer people being prosecuted for mandatory minimum sentences and length of stay increases has pushed up the population, but not to the degree that was originally projected. On top of that, I think community policing, drug and alcohol treatment kinds of projects, things that the DOC has done, and particularly community corrections kinds of activities all have impact. And I think that goes back to that whole issue around systems approaches to the overburdening one aspect of the system is not the answer. It's building a comprehensive system, I think, that addresses criminal activity that makes a difference.
Okay. The reason I ask is that in our introduction here by LFO staff, this is three goals. One is to remove the 40-year age cap for boot camp. At the same time, it seems to be a younger population coming in. What are we trying to increase older offenders into something? A boot camp typically is designed for a younger person. When I went in the military, I was 17. If I went in now, I wouldn't survive more than 24 hours. So I wonder, are we trying to compress something in the boot camp there that may in fact have a negative effect, and then we're going to have to take this person and incarcerate them somewhere else, thereby increasing the time.
Or am I wrecking your presence?
Oh, you're leading life right there.
Oh, okay.
It's plenty good.
I'm the director.
Great.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Benjamin Tihon. I'm the Deputy Director of the Oregon Department of Corrections. I just wanted to jump in on that, Senator, because sometimes it is difficult to understand the various mixes in our population. It is true that the population is doubling. It is also true that it's growing very rapidly in two quadrants. We're having many more younger children coming into our system, and at the same time, because of determinate sentencing, the folks who do go there stay longer. So you have an aging of the population on one end of the continuum and a greater frequency of youngsters coming into the system. So it's both getting older and younger at the same time.
I'm going to ask some more questions.
And on boot camp centers specifically, those people who are more than 40 years of age have to qualify for it through physical assessments and other kinds of criteria. If they're not prepared to undergo the rigor of that, they won't go to boot camp. But we're offering the opportunity, since a number of offenders who were eligible for boot camp 4 years ago prior to Senate Bill 1145 are now incarcerated or doing time in the counties. So we're adding
this
to
the kind of catch-up.
Exactly.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Representative Patrick, I was just going to mention that 1145 costs a lot of the increase in length of time and some other things. So that's why.
Okay. Let's go to Dash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Bill McGee, Department of Social Services. You've got my handout on the department's budget. I'd love for it as quickly as I can. The $765.4 million general fund recommendation is a 17.3% increase over the 97-99 legislative approved budget. The total funds of $869.2 million is an increase of 19.4% over the legislative budget. The key components in the budget we'll be presenting to you are the funding for the population forecast projected through the April 99 forecast, supporting the department's long-range construction plan with funding for new and expanded facilities throughout the state, postponing operation of the Women's Prison and Intake Center until the 2001-2003 biennium, elimination of general fund for 40 work crew supervisors, and increase in other funds for inmate work program operations and business development.
increased funding for community corrections for cost of county management of 7-1145 offenders, and budget reduces funding for institutions, programs, administration throughout the department. Building blocks here, we started with a alleged adopted budget of $629.9 million general fund and $701.4 million total fund, with 3,088.04 full-time equivalent positions. The emergency board actions through April of 98, the salary adjustment, of course, approval of expenditure limitation for construction of the Women's Prison Intake Center at the Damage State Hospital, approval of debt service to acquire a central warehouse and distribution facility in Salem, construction planning, management, and debt service on a variety of different programs, and correction of the year 2000 computer bug. Current service level adjustments, and you'll see a number of these in each program unit through the department, position and inflationary cost changes, of course. Startup and operating funds for the Women's Prison Intake Center were in the current service level. They're eliminated in the governor's recommended budget as a budget reduction. Startup and operations for the Two Rivers Correctional Institution in Umatilla. Phase-in of new beds at the Snake River Correctional Institution in Ontario. Elimination of one-time costs for bed units that were opened in the current biennium. Prison and Senate Bill 1145 population growth through the October 98 forecast were included in the current service level. That includes placement of women inmates at Eastern Oregon Correctional Institution at Pendleton. There are adjustments to debt service for certificates of participation sold through the end of this biennium. There's elimination of capital construction expenditure limitation for previously approved projects, and there are technical adjustments among program units that have no increase in the agency's funding. I'll summarize the policy packages now and go through the details of both the program units, but there are 33 packages. The packages in the governor's budget reduce it by $19.7 million general fund and increase by $23.2 million total funds, eliminating 319 positions and 29.47 FTE.
Mr. Chairman,
can I ask a question? The delay of operation of the women's prison intake center for 2001-2003, my question I have there is the emergency board action up above through April 98 called for the construction. This is the operational cost, is that correct?
Correct.
So is the plan still to start the building process this biennium or this next biennium?
Well, I think at this point, I think we have debt service in for a sale of next biennium, so that would be when the budget is set to construct and start.
For this upcoming biennium on July 1st?
Sure. Okay. Operations was originally scheduled for the last 6 months of the biennium. This budget postponed operations until 2001-2003.
I see. Okay. Thank you.
So as I go through the budget package, the first that references the operation of that institution, and because of the delay of the operation, the budget includes funds to rent beds for rent beds for the last 6 months of the 99-2001 biennium. The governor's budget packages reduce startup costs for the Two Rivers Correctional Institution in Umatilla, eliminate 40 inmate work crew supervisors, creates a mobile work camp to employ 80 inmates in forest health and reforestation in central and eastern Oregon, enhances programming for inmates with both mental health and substance abuse disorders, increases federal state criminal alien assistance program revenues used to offset institutional costs, increases payments to the Clackamas County Sheriff's Office for operation of the intake center that is currently running there until we construct the new facility, establishes management and technical support positions for the offender information and sentence computation units, funds startup and operations for the new warehouse and distribution center with reductions from anticipated savings in inmate care costs, so that's a net zero agency-wide. Establishes positions to implement a deferred maintenance management program to begin to address the department's $75.5 million deferred maintenance backlog. Funds environmental compliance and cleanup projects with certificates of participation revenues, and funds expansion of minimum custody facilities in Baker City and Tillamook, planning and design for expansion of the minimum custody facility in North Bend, and pre-construction activities for new facilities in Lakeview, Junction City, and Madras, all funded with COPs, and other funds costs for these projects include establishment of project management teams. There is in the governor's original budget, there was an emergency board recommendation of $7.7 million general fund to fund county costs related to Senate Bill 1145 offenders. As we go into the governor's revised budget, we'll have a change recommendation on that. If there are questions, I will move into the governor's revised budget. The governor's revised budget delays beds at Snake River and Two Rivers facilities as a result of the April 99 prison population forecast. There was a reduction in the growth rate in that forecast, as you recall from when the Economic Analysis Division presented that to you. The governor's division shifts the emergency board appropriation for Senate Bill 1145 costs to the department's budget and delays implementation of the new reimbursement model in order to fund the April 99 Senate Bill 1145 forecast, which did show an increase in that population. Governor's revised budget reduces staffing at Two Rivers by 15% to reflect operational efficiencies. Delays implementation of televideo visiting at Two Rivers, pending the review of a pilot. The department will begin a smaller program and review it before full implementation. Governor's revised reduces funding for alcohol and drug treatment, education services, and health services. Reduces the inflation allowance in most divisions. Eliminates positions, delays hiring, and reduces service and supplies in the Central Support and Operations Administration Program Units. Eliminates funding for network and backup costs in the Information Systems Division. Reduces funding for equipment repair and replacement and captures savings from the radio repair program. Shifts equipment purchases at Two Rivers from general fund to other funds. Increases funding for Attorney General costs. Funds a new COP management assessment from the State Treasurer that you saw in the OIA budget. There are a number of what we think are simply technical adjustments for large budgets, so there are unfortunately quite a few of them. We're capturing savings from the refinance of COP sold to finance the Two Rivers construction. We were able to capture the lower interest rate and save some money there. We restore unintended reduction in service and supplies for inmate work crews. We simply took too much in the governor's budget. We restore duplicate reductions in service and supplies for Two Rivers startup and operations. We took some money twice unintentionally. We fund reclassification of information systems positions that should have been included in the current service level and were omitted. We have some errors to correct in the estimated cost of new positions. We are establishing other funds expenditure limitation for F&S for the new inmate work programs established in 97-99. We are adjusting position and FTE counts to basically to correct errors in packages relating to the population management plan at the current service level. We're transferring four positions among divisions with no increase in cost, it's just position transfer. Correcting errors in the revenue accounts and inmate work programs are simply recorded in the wrong place. Capturing savings from reduced Attorney General rates and Department of Justice budget that you passed out. We're continuing two limited duration positions as permanent in canteen operations, other funds. And we're asking you to establish two $1 capital construction other fund expenditure limitations for Senate Bill 1145 projects. One is a combined project with Klamath Lake County, the other is in Lincoln County. The details of those projects are not resolved, so we'll be back in the emergency board for the full limitation. The result of all that is a reduction of $10.8 million from the governor's recommended budget in general fund and a reduction of $11 million in total funds from the governor's recommended, with a reduction of 67 positions, 101.68 FTEs. And primarily what's missing in this budget are the 40 workforce supervisors, reduction in funding for alcohol and drug education and health programs, and there are significant reductions from current service level and startup and operations. And finally, in terms of new budget, the Department of Corrections participates in the Governor's Google Contravention Partnership, although there aren't any funds for that partnership in this budget.
Chris Chamberlain?
Senator Hannon.
Bill, on page 4 of your statement, it says correct errors in revenue accounts in inmate work programs. Inmates do work for ODOT, as an example, State Park.
The work crews are also all the industry programs.
Is this correcting the rate that you charge the agency? What kind of correction is it?
In ABIS, we had money in one line that should have been in another line.
Oh, that's
right. These are all just simple technical issues.
Do you have a going rate that you charge for inmate labor to ODOT or State Parks?
I know the department will spend some time on this in the presentation. The standard rate is all day Thursday. The standard rate is this finding is $400 a day for a crew of 10 inmates for an 8-hour day.
And does that include security?
That's the primary cost, is the cost of the officer to go with the crew. It's 80-90% of the cost, I believe.
Your figures and what ODOT gave us were a little different. And a little different yet from the parts department.
Chair Senator Hannon, the standard rate for a crew is $400. There are some differences that I know the department will get into.
Okay.
For example,
I have a question about that. I'd like to have your hand
raised. That is the inmate labor work is being projected here for some of these different agencies. As an example, of Cave Parks.
It's a spread out geographic area.
They feel that not enough security personnel are being provided. And then, of course, it's their employees to become correctional officers rather than parks employees. And that is a major concern that they have. And when they get to that point, I would appreciate it because, Mr. Chairman, I think it's a real valid issue. If I was a park ranger and all of a sudden I became a corrections officer, not by choice but chance, I'd have some difficulty with that.
Big Ben's jumping this a bit.
Senator Hannon, we intend to go over that in some detail, also including some of our new legislation which would affect that.
Okay.
Michael Casey, administrator of the Inmate Work Programs, will be here, and the two of us will do an in-depth presentation on that.
Super.
Mr. Chair, just a clarification so there are no surprises when we get to this. For the 40 work-through supervisors are being eliminated. Among those, we'll eliminate the dedicated crew supervisors for the Parks Division and for the Military Department, as well as a number of institutional work-through supervisors, and eight who are in the farm program, but those positions are vacant.
By elimination of those
40?
Supervisors and the military supervisors as well. What additional consideration is given for those other agencies that contract for inmate labor? Who's going to be the security for those people?
Mr. Chair, the assumption would be that if those departments are able to afford another funded officer, their crews would still be available. Otherwise, they would have to attempt to schedule among the remaining 21 crew supervisors that are still general funded.
Okay. In preparation for your
presentation on Thursday, I'd like to have you identify some things because we added that. Some additional money in the Parks Department for hiring professional services. And now if we're estimating here the elimination of 40 positions, I'd like to have you come back in and tell us what those 40 positions are and who they relate to, because the good representative from Salem brought in a request to add $1 million to hire inmate labor for the state park. And I was just asking the question on their presentation on Friday where they're eliminating 40 positions. So does that mean parks have to be the corrections officers for the inmate labor? That was the question that arose, so recall, when we had our subcommittee action. And I feel that we need to raise it in this subcommittee as well.
I mean, and the answer should be that parks should not have to be the corrections officers, but the Department of Corrections will need to work with parks to provide the supervision and the certification as any individuals who may be supervising. There is a new certification program being proposed as to people who may assist corrections officers in supervising inmate work crews, but you still have a corrections officer there, and then you might have somebody who's been certified that's not going to be ultimately responsible, so they have some idea about how to handle inmates. But the idea is to have corrections be responsible for that part of the bargain.
Bill, are you done? With
there are no more questions.
Oh, he just did this real quick. And
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, very briefly, I'd like to touch on the question of recidivism before we go on with the presentation.
And well, we're not going to get into the administration. I don't want to.
Oh, you don't want to do it
yet? From Dave all wound up halfway through a presentation and you would touch off. What you should do in 6 minutes.
We can finish our review in 6 minutes easily.
And then we'll talk about recidivism later.
Oh. Would you like me to go ahead and finish this portion then, sir?
Right.
Okay. You want to jump right to factors?
I think we should.
All right. Let me just finish for the day when I think Representative Russell and members of the committee lay out the budget presentation for you over the next several days. We have divided the presentation up into 6 decision units, specifically in the work programs, which includes industries and other work programs, correctional programs. Includes the CTS program, Counseling Treatment Services, Health, Workforce Development, and Religious Services, the Institutions program, which we will talk about, I hope, primarily tomorrow, Classification Transport, the operational issues, Emergency Preparedness and Interstate Compact issues, and Administration, that speaks directly to the Director's Office, Inspection, Public Affairs, Records, Community Corrections Administration, the Community Corrections Program, which is essentially the grant and aid piece of this, and Central Support, Business and Finance, ISSD unit, and Human Resources. It was our plan to go directly to administration. I think you'd prefer we not get partway into that and stop. If I might, Mr. Chair, for tomorrow, we would like to cover the Community Corrections piece relative to the 7.7 and the grants early on, if that meets with your approval, and then go directly into institutions. As part of that discussion around community corrections, we'll do the administration and community corrections sort of wrap into one and move on to institutions.
Okay.
Is that going to work?
That works.
Okay.
Any follow-up questions? You want to talk just a second about the recidivism?
I can pick it up when we deal with the programs later on. We can squeeze it in.
Okay. We are adjourned.